Hearts in Atlantis, Disc 13.
There was one more round of prelims before the Thanksgiving break, and for the young scholars of Chamberlain III, it was a disaster. By then, most of us understood that we were a disaster, that we were committing a kind of group suicide. Kirby McClendon did his freak-out thing and disappeared like a rabbit in a magic trick. Kenny Auster, who usually sat in the corner during the marathon games and picked his nose when he couldn't decide what card to play next, simply bugged out one day. He left a queen of spades with the words, "I quit," written across it on his pillow. George Lessard joined Steve Ogg and Jack Frady in Chad, the brain dorm. 6 down, 13 to go. It should have been enough. Hell, just what happened to poor old Kirby should have been enough. In the last 3 or 4 days before he freaked, his hands were trembling so badly he had trouble picking up his cards, and he jumped in his seat if someone slammed a door in the hall. Kirby should have been enough, but he wasn't. Nor was my time with Carol the answer. When I was actually with her, yes, I was fine. When I was with her, all I wanted was information, and maybe to bawl her socks off. When I was in the dorm, though, especially in that goddamn third-floor lounge, I became another version of Peter Riley. In the third-floor lounge, I was a stranger to myself. As Thanksgiving approached, a kind of blind fatalism set in. None of us talked about it, though. We talked about the movies, or sex. "I get more ass than a merry-go-round pony," Ronnie used to crow, usually with no warning or conversational lead-in of any kind. But mostly we talked about Vietnam and hearts. Our hearts discussions were about who was ahead, who was behind, and who couldn't seem to master the few simple strategic ploys of the game. Void yourself in at least one suit. Pass mid-range hearts to someone who likes to shoot the moon. If you have to take a trick, always take it high. Our only real response to the looming third round of prelims was to organize the game into a kind of endless revolving tournament. We were still playing Nicola Point, but we were now also playing for match points. The system for awarding match points was quite complex, but Randy Eccles and Hugh Brennan worked out a good formula in 2 feverish late-night sessions. Both of them, incidentally, were flunking their introductory math courses. Neither was invited back at the conclusion of the fall semester. 33 years have passed since that pre-Thanksgiving round of exams, and the man that boy became still winces at the memory of them. I flunked everything but sociology and intro English. I didn't have to see the grades to know it, either. Skip said he'd flag the board except for calc, and there he barely squeaked by. I was taking Carol out to a movie that night, our one pre-break date, and our last, although I didn't know that then, and saw Ronnie Malenfant on my way to get my car. I asked him how he thought he'd done on his tests. Ronnie smiled and winked and said, "Aced everything, champ, just like on fucking College Bowl. I'm not worried." But in the light of the parking lot, I could see his smile wavering minutely at the corners. His skin was too pale, and his acne, bad when we started school in September, was worse than ever. "How about you?" "They're going to make me Dean of Arts and Sciences," I said. "That tell you anything?" Ronnie burst out laughing. "You fucking pisspot!" He clapped me on the shoulder. The cocky look in his eyes had been replaced by fright that made him look younger. "Going out?" "Yeah." "Carol?" "Yeah." "Good for you. She's a great-looking chick." For Ronnie, this was nearly heart-rending sincerity. "And if I don't see you in the lounge later on, have a great turkey day." "You too, Ronnie." "Yeah, sure." Looking at me from the corners of his eyes rather than straight on, trying to hold the smile. "One way or another, I guess we're both going to eat the bird, wouldn't you say?" "Yeah, I guess that pretty well sums it up."